views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Moms, are you ready to become enlightened, empowered, and stress-free? Well, get ready because you are about to tune into vibrant, powerful moms helping everyday women create an extraordinary life with Debbie Pokornik. Each week, Debbie discusses topics to help you become self-aware, inspired, and on track to create the life you crave. It's time to stop settling and start thriving. And it all begins now on Transformation Talk Radio.
This is Debbie Pokornik, your host of Vibrant, Powerful Moms. Today, I'd like to talk about reconnecting with your inner wisdom, which is linked to your intuition. And this is something that everybody has, even if you're not currently aware of it, along with your inner critic, which actually fools a lot of people and can stop you from standing in your power and growing in a positive way. I think it's a really important topic because, I mean, the truth is you're going to take both of these things with you everywhere you go, and they're going to influence every aspect of your life. So the critic can actually rob you of your vibrancy, which is like your confidence, your poise, your resiliency, your energy, while the inner wisdom can help you to really bring out the best in yourself. So it can help you be a better mom, wife, daughter, employee, boss, etc. And it can also guide you towards making smarter decisions and avoiding major disasters. And I think these are very important things for all of us to be able to do. So I'm going to share ways to recognize the difference between these two messengers, because that can be very confusing in itself for a lot of people. And I'm also going to share some ideas for getting your inner critic under control, because if you just allow it to do its own thing, it truly can wreak havoc in your life. Now, all of my podcasts are about increasing your self-awareness. And when you become more self-aware, you're automatically going to reconnect with your inner wisdom. So we're specifically today talking about your inner wisdom as if it's an isolated thing, but really, we're talking about this in every single podcast. So in case you're wondering, we're just going to continue to build on it. And today is a very important start to that journey. So I thought I'd start by sharing a story from my own life that I think really illustrates the difference between how the inner critic might appear in your life and how the inner wisdom does as well. And plus, I think it's an interesting story. So let me share it with you. About 5 or 6 years ago, back in 2010, it was spring break here in Manitoba, which is in Canada, right in the middle of Canada, for those of you who don't know. And so we decided, my husband and I, that we should take our teenagers and head out for one last hurrah on the ski hill. Now, the closest hill that makes any sense to even travel to in Manitoba is about 5 hours away. So I had this feeling that, ooh, you know what? I don't know that the snow is still going to be there because the weather is warming up. So I phoned the hill and they told me that, oh, yeah, no problem. We have lots of snow. We're staying open all week. Everything's good. Come on out. So we packed up everything and got ourselves ready and we're just about to load into the car. And I had this feeling that I should go back up to my bedroom and just do one last scan. So I did. And sure enough, there on the floor in my bedroom is my first aid kit. Not the end of the world, except that I use homeopathy and natural remedies for everything. So if I forgot it and if I needed it, I wouldn't be able to just go to any store or any pharmacy and pick these things up. So I was happy that I had gone back up there. I grabbed the kit and off we went. Now on the drive there, it was getting warmer and warmer. And the closer we got to the hill, the less snow we saw, which was a little bit concerning to us. But whatever, we got to our rental and got all set up, and the next morning headed over to the hill. It was so slushy. It was like skiing through water. And we definitely thought about turning around and going back home. But we had friends that had decided to come out as well. And we kind of felt like, you know, we shouldn't chicken out that easily. Plus, it was my husband's birthday. So we decided, all right, let's just make the best of it, have as much fun as we can. And if we want to, we'll go home tomorrow. So off we went to play on the hill. Now, we got to the furthest point from the chalet when I realized that I was definitely overheating because I was overdressed for that ski hill. So I took off my hot pink Rip Zone jacket and I tied it around my waist so it could kind of flap out behind me as I raced down the hill. After a day of playing, we were heading up the lift for one last time, and I was riding with my friend and her young son. And, you know, we're watching all the workers below us, and they're taking down snow fences, and we're kind of complaining to each other about the fact that the lift operator had just told us this was the last run, that they were closing down the hill early, that the snow was just disappearing too fast. So as we got to the top of the hill, my friend turned to her young son and she pointed over to the right and said, "Alex, we're going that way. Please don't cut me off." Now, I was sitting to the right of Alex, so I decided that I should get up and zip to the right as soon as I got off of the chair so that I wouldn't be in their way. Well, it turns out that was a very bad decision. You see, my jacket that was tied around my waist was hanging down through the handrail. And when I zipped to the right, it kind of locked the material around the handle of the chair. So I was stuck. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with skiing, but the chairlift stops all the time. Those people are so good at pushing the button and stopping when somebody's stuck, or usually they're not stuck, but when they fall down or, you know, when anything like that happens. So I went to yell, "I'm stuck, stop the chairlift." And I heard the voice in my head say, "Don't panic, you'll look like a fool." So I just kind of said, "I'm stuck, stop the lift." They didn't stop it. So I felt this even stronger urging, from deep inside of me that said, "Say it again, louder." So I did. This time I kind of yelled with a little bit of a panicky voice, "Stop the lift, I'm stuck." But the lift kept moving. So like I pulled at my jacket. I'm trying to get it to rip or to let go. And all the while I'm thinking, why did you tie your jacket around your waist? How stupid was that? The chair took exception to my resistance and it swung me up in the air, like high over the safety bar and back towards the ski run. "Oh my God," I thought, "they're not stopping it. I'm going to be dragged over." "Stop pulling," went through my mind. But how ridiculous was that? The lift was dragging me towards the 20-foot drop. Of course I needed to pull. As it dragged me to the end of the safety net, I tried to brace my hip against the last bar. I just so didn't want to go over that net and, you know, be hanging above the ground. But, you know, those lifts are really strong. You can't stop them. So it just pulled me right over. And all I could think was, this can't be happening. This is like a nightmare. I'm going to die. Finally, the lift stopped. And it's like it's about 15 feet past the safety of the net and just a few feet shy of where the drop becomes a 60-foot drop down a black diamond run. And the chair is swinging wildly. And all I can do is hang there. And I kept thinking, you can't fall in ski boots. Your legs will break for sure. Just hold on until they back up the lift. Hold on. They're going to back up the lift. What's taking them so long? Oh, I hope my kids aren't watching. Somebody please help me. Now, I wasn't saying any of these things out loud. These were just the thoughts in my mind. But deep down inside, I knew that I just had to calm down. I had to breathe and hold on tight. But hold on for what? it became apparent really quickly that they were not prepared for this type of an emergency. The people were supposed to hit the safety bar. That was supposed to stop the lift. So there was no reason for me to be hanging there, except it had thrown me right over the safety lift. So there I was. I just kept thinking, oh, this is so stupid. It's not fair. Everyone's watching. What a spectacle I'm making of myself. Like, I can't believe this is the end. It was such a variety of different thoughts when I really think about it now. With my heart in my throat, I suddenly had this very clear realization. You're going to have to get yourself down. So I took a deep breath because I knew I had to quiet these other raging thoughts in my mind for me to clearly think this through. And so I breathed deep and I hung there. And I felt this calmness go through me. And as soon as I did, it was like this plan just kind of bubbled up. And I thought, okay, kick off your skis, let go of the chair, trust that your jacket's going to hold, then lower yourself through your jacket. That'll cut half the distance, and you'll be able to drop the rest of the way. Bend your knees deeply when you land. So I took a deep breath, and I followed my plan. What if my jacket's too tight? That sent me into another panic as that thought surged through my mind. But I breathed deeply and decided then I'll wiggle out of it. I kicked off my skis, forced my fingers to let go of the chair, wiggled through my still tight jacket, and fell to the earth. As I slammed into the ground, I bent my knees like really deep, which actually did save my legs, but it also propelled me forward. So I ended up smashing my helmeted head onto the frozen earth. And that's probably the only time in my life I've ever actually seen stars. Now, recovering from this was not easy. I had a major concussion and really bad whiplash. And so I couldn't drive for many months. I couldn't think. My energy level was super low, but I had gotten myself down. I was alive and my legs weren't broken. So I was feeling pretty good. Now, I share this story because, number one, I think it's a very interesting story, but maybe I'm a bit biased. I've also learned a lot from that experience, and so I like to use what I've learned to help other people rebuild their own lives after a traumatic event occurs. But I share it here on this podcast because I really do think that it nicely illustrates the difference between the inner critic, who I now refer to mine as Nagy. I didn't know her then, but I became familiar with her after that, and my inner wisdom, which was there, and it was trying to guide me, even though I didn't necessarily recognize it. I didn't know that's what the other voice was. So your inner critic provides thoughts that make you afraid. They keep you playing small. They're the voice that keeps you from moving out of your comfort zone. It's a well-intentioned thing, I think, but it tends to be fear-based, and so it is trying to hold you back. Now, some people have a really nasty inner critic, which puts them down, reminds them of all their shortfalls, sets them up for failure, and so on. And I have to say, Nagy was like that for me before I became really aware of her. Now, in this situation, Nagy supplied the thoughts about how other people were going to view me. You know, people are looking at you, you look stupid, that kind of thing. You're drawing attention to yourself. And it was also Nagy that panicked when she realized that I truly was going over the edge. And, you know, it was that whole, you're going to die, you're going to break your legs. All of those were my inner critic piping up and panicking. Now, in truth, Nagy came out many times that day because the ski hill was a little bit difficult to ski on. You were skiing through water a whole bunch of the time, and my skis would grab, and I'd lose my balance, and I would hear Nagy pipe up and say things like, you know, watch out, you're going to fall, you're too old for this, you're going to break your leg, these kinds of thoughts. Your inner critic wants to keep you safe, but it would like to do so kind of by putting you in a padded room where you can't get hurt, but where you also can't really fully live your life. My inner wisdom, on the other hand, is much quieter than Nagi. In my story, it was the inner wisdom that sent me back to my room to grab my first aid kit. It didn't say you've forgotten your first aid kit. It just said, check your room one more time. And it turns out I definitely needed that first aid kit. It was also inner wisdom that told me it was too warm for the snow. Now, I didn't listen to that piece of advice, and instead, I phoned the ski hill. They told me everything was fine. They told me they had enough snow and that they were staying open all week, so we packed up and we left. But my inner wisdom did try to tell me that we didn't need to go, and perhaps was even trying to save me from this accident. I also ignored my inner wisdom when it told me to shout at the attendants, right? I felt like I wanted to shout, and yet my inner critic said, you're going to look like a fool if you panic. I mean, they stop the lift all the time. It's no big deal. Now, it turns out that the attendants were both in the safety net trying to fix something there. So they did need me to shout, and they needed them to actually look at me to see I was stuck. Because otherwise, all they do is look up and see that the next few chairs didn't have anybody on it. So if someone had fallen down, it was no big deal. They didn't need to stop the lift. So I did need to shout, and my inner wisdom was trying to tell me that. It was also my inner wisdom that told me how to get down. I mean, it wasn't until I quieted the inner critic and took some calm, deep breaths that I was able to hear it. But my inner wisdom already had a plan for how I could do this. Prior to that, I truly believed that there was no way down unless somebody saved me or unless I broke my legs. So the inner wisdom was there. It was telling me this, but I couldn't hear it over the shouting of my inner critic. So let me boil this down for you so that it makes sense. Your inner critic tends to be judgmental, fearful, loud, critical whenever it pipes up. I often suggest that people write out the thoughts in their head, not all of them, that would take way too long, but just a few of them. And then if they would give those thoughts an exclamation point, if they'd underline something or bold it or italicize it, then that's their inner critic talking, because the inner critic is always laced with emotion. Inner wisdom, on the other hand, simply suggests. It's guiding you, but it's like a lighthouse on the shore of the land. You know, it doesn't get any brighter or start flashing if you don't listen. It simply puts out its guidance and then allows you to use your free will to choose to listen to it or not. It's like it's not invested in the outcome. It's just trying to guide you. But everything we do teaches us something. Now, I ignored my inner wisdom several times that day, but it doesn't mean it wasn't there providing the guidance. It actually told me to stop pulling. And at the time, that seemed really ludicrous to me because it's natural instinct. I wanted to stop that chairlift, but my inner wisdom knew I couldn't. And so what I ended up doing by pulling so hard is I actually overextended my arms and my shoulders, like my elbows and shoulders, and it really hurt. It took a lot longer to heal than it had needed to. If I had just hung there, I don't think I would have overextended them that much. In full disclosure, I also remember hearing the thought, be very careful, when I tied my jacket around my waist. But that was quickly overruled by my inner critic, who kind of went, don't be silly, you'll be fine, just do it. The critic is so loud and bossy that we are much more likely to listen to it than that quiet nudge that comes from deeper within. So if you've never really paid attention to where your thoughts are coming from, then this might feel like something I'm making up, but it really isn't. Becoming aware of the inner critic is the first step towards taking back your power from this invisible force and helping you to reconnect with your natural guidance system. So, I challenge you to start to notice your thoughts. Choose a few to write down every day you know, in your journal or just even on a piece of paper. Again, don't make this an onerous task or anything, but just notice some of them and pay attention. Is it more like a nudge? Or does it feel like a shout, a command, an insult? Would you put any punctuation on it? Another trick is to notice when it keeps repeating. Like, you left out the cat, you left out the cat, you left out the cat. That's nagging, right? And that would be the inner critic. In my experience, inner wisdom rarely repeats itself. The only time in my whole life I remember, since I've tuned in really, is on this chairlift, where it told me to shout, and then when I didn't shout, it said, say it again, louder. That was the sense I got. It was a very strong urging, and it came at me twice. But it didn't just repeat the same thing. So inner critic has emotion attached. Inner wisdom does not. And then what you can do is you can give your inner critic a name. I gave mine Nagy. In my book, Standing in Your Power, she names hers Snarky. And you can give whatever name you want, but I encourage people all the time to avoid names of people that you actually know. Because number one, you're only going to choose a name of somebody who you find to be bossy, critical, condescending, that kind of thing. And so by giving them this name, you are giving your power away to them in a huge way. You're allowing them to live in your head, and you're trying to guess what they would be thinking, even when they're not there, and ascribing those thoughts to them. So don't give them that kind of power. And also, if they're not there, and you're deciding this is what they would be saying, then you're going to be creating even more resentment against them. And that's not going to help you figure out what the heck is going on. And obviously, there's someone who are in your life for a reason, because if not, you wouldn't put up with it. Because who wants to be around that kind of energy, right? So don't give the inner critic a name that is a real person in your life. Instead, make something up that works for you, but that is a fictitious name. Okay? Now, if you can't hear your inner wisdom yet, in other words, all of your thoughts seem loud, derogatory, mean, the ones that are talking directly to you, that's okay. That's actually very, very common if you haven't tuned into this before. So focus your attention on becoming aware of the inner critic and starting to set boundaries to train the inner critic. And to limit what it's allowed to say to you, you can actually tell it to pipe down. You can pretend to see a volume button and turn it down. You know, and I used to tell people all the time that you can debate it, you can minimize it, you can make it look smaller, you can give it Mickey Mouse ears, you can send it off packing. And in fact, in my book, Standing in Your Power, I talk about all of these ideas. But I've kind of changed my mind a little bit on that. As I've gotten to know Nagy, I realize that Nagy is behaving the way she does because she truly is fearful. That's the inner critic comes from a place of fear and so on. And it doesn't help us to try to get rid of it because it's going to be there anyway. So if you have to live with it, I always like to teach people to pretend it's kind of like your eccentric old aunt. You know, that one that is super opinionated. You know, she has good intentions, but she says it as she sees it. And she has a very limited perspective. You know, she's way too protective. And some of her ideas are slightly wacky. See your inner critic like that. You don't want to take what she's saying and, you know, take it to heart, but you do want to learn how to work with her. Your inner wisdom, on the other hand, is like that wise elder in your life. She's very connected, knowledgeable, loving, understanding. So you definitely want to get to know her better. You do not want her to disappear into the background where you can't even hear what she's saying. Okay? So let me summarize this in three simple steps. Step one, become aware of your inner critic if you aren't already and set some boundaries with her. If you don't have anything nice to say to me, don't say it at all. You're not helping. Be quiet. These kinds of boundaries to tell the inner critic that it's not okay for her to treat you badly. And I'll tell you right now, she will listen because you are her controller. All right? You're bringing up those thoughts. So you do control her. Step two, notice your inner wisdom, and especially what happens when you don't listen to it, because this is going to give you proof that she's there and she gives good advice. Now, if you feel right now like you have absolutely no inner wisdom whatsoever, there's no intuition there, you're not connected to it, then I challenge you to notice those times where you go, oh, shoot, I knew this was going to happen. Or, oh, I even thought about going back and getting the extra set of keys. I knew I should have. That is times where your inner wisdom has talked to you and you have ignored it. Okay? So pay attention to that. Start to notice and start to notice those little inklings that say, you know, move the honey away from the edge of the counter. And if you don't, minutes later, the honey topples to the floor. You've got a big mess to clean up. And you, oh, I knew I should have moved that. I knew it. That's your inner wisdom. Step three, allow your inner critic to build you up. In other words, when you're limiting what she can say, train her to provide positive, supportive thoughts. You can do it. I believe in you. That's where we talk about positive thinking. This is where you can bring that in. And then choose your inner wisdom as the one to guide you. So your inner critic is not your guide. It's not meant to be your guide. Okay, so use your inner wisdom to guide you because it is well equipped for that job. It's actually a rare person who can easily do this or naturally do this, where their inner critic doesn't ever pipe up and put them down, or they hear their intuition and listen to it all the time. So don't feel bad if you struggle with this. I now listen to my inner wisdom a lot, but there's still many times where I think, shoot, I knew I needed to move that important piece of paper before I poured the juice. And I didn't. And now there's juice on the paper, right? So I still do it. And most people do. This one little task is a huge part of the human experience, becoming aware of these subtle differences. And by doing this, it will start you on the path towards standing in your power on a regular basis. So it's really well worth it. With much respect for you and the journey that you're on, this is Debbie Pokornik wishing you a vibrant and powerful day.
You've been listening to Vibrant, Powerful Moms with host Debbie Pokornik. If you've enjoyed this show, please give us a shout out and leave us a positive review. To find out more about Debbie and her sisterhood of Vibrant, Powerful Moms, visit empoweringenergy.com. That's empowering with letters NRG.com.
This is Debbie Pokornik with a break-free parenting tip. My definition of a good leader is someone who inspires others to do their best by focusing on being the best he or she can be as a leader. In other words, the best way to get your kids to work with you is to focus on yourself first. So ask yourself the following questions. Am I acting in a way I would like my child to imitate, or am I telling him one thing and modeling another? Am I enjoying most of my days by focusing on the positives, or am I pointing out all the things that went wrong and all the problems I have encountered? Am I building myself up on a regular basis, believing in my own ability and taking pride in the things that I have accomplished, or am I downplaying the goals I reach and belittling my own efforts? In other words, am I struggling to receive? Am I taking care of myself in ways that show my health is a priority? There's no skill involved in bossing people around. There is a lot of skill involved in being a good boss. If we want to be a leader in our family, we must focus first on the one thing within our control, ourselves. When you focus on being positive, giving others the benefit of the doubt, forgiving mistakes, and controlling your emotions, you feel good about yourself. You're also inspiring these qualities in your kids. And those are our future leaders.